10th of the Jewish tradition. In the periodical Moment, published in Warsaw, Jabotinsky wrote an article in Hebrew entitled Eile Shehitzilu, These Are the Ones That Rescued, where he publicly thanked Rav Kook for his major role in bringing about Stavsky's acquittal. This would prove to be Rav Kook's last venture in the public arena. Rav Kook was suffering from cancer while all this was happening, and he died a year later, on the third day of Elul, September 1, 1935. How could Rav Kook be so certain that Stavsky was innocent? Was Rav Kook simply responding to the excesses of the labor Zionist movement, neutralizing their certainty of Stavsky's guilt with his certainty of Stavsky's innocence? In other words, given the highly charged atmosphere in Eretz Yisrael in 1933, it is possible that Rav Kook sensed a blood libel. After all, the workers of Israel had decided that Stavsky was guilty. They wanted, the Mapai, as it were, party, the workers of Israel, wanted someone to pay for the assassination of Alazarov, and one, of course, can't blame them. But it's not just that they wanted someone to pay, they wanted a Zionist revisionist to pay for the assassination or murder of Chaim Alazarov. So this was a kind of blood libel. And it's possible that Rav Kook sensed this, and he did what he had to do in order to prevent an injustice from taking place. There are those who have suggested that Rav Kook was naive and that he somehow believed that no Jew could ever murder another Jew, hence his conviction that Stavsky was innocent. This is absurd. Anybody who ever learned Tanakh or learned Shas, and Rav Kook knew Tanakh and Shas backwards and forwards, anyone who knew Jewish history, and Rav Kook knew Jewish history, would know that, unfortunately, Jews kill Jews throughout history. It may not happen often, but it's happened. So surely, Rav Kook wasn't all that naive. Even aside from that, Rav Kook was silent for almost a year after the murder was committed and Stavsky was arrested and charged with the murder. If Rav Kook really felt that no Jew could ever have killed a Jew, he could have and should have protested from the start. One suspects that Rav Kook became privy to information shortly before or immediately after Stavsky was found guilty. Rav Kook could not reveal the source of his information or its specific content without endangering the career and even the life of the informant. Rav Kook had Talmidim who worked for British intelligence, and they supplied Rav Kook with information, but he could not reveal where this information came from. The informant's information sufficed to persuade Rav Kook that Alazarov had been murdered by others, and therefore Stavsky was innocent of the charges against him. This appears to be the most rational explanation of Rav Kook's behavior during the Alazarov affair. But I have to tell you that others suggest, indeed the Talmidim of Rav Kook suggest, that Rav Kook was among the righteous, among those tzaddikim, to whom the Lord reveals his secrets. Rav Kook, of course, was a mystic, he was a Kabbalist, and they claim he was informed somehow through Kabbalah that Stavsky had a still more important role to play in Jewish history, which we'll talk about briefly. In any event, along those lines, I can tell you that Rav Kook's son and successor, Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kook, was once asked how he accounted for his father's stance in the Alazarov affair, and Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kook responded by citing a verse from Tehillim, Sod Hashem li Reyov uvriso lahodiyam. The secret of the Lord is for those who fear him. To them he makes known his covenant, implying that Rav Kook was privy to information from on high. In any event, whether it was Rav Kook, the rational humanist at work, or whether it was Rav Kook, the Jewish mystic at work, in our case, every one of you will have to decide for him or herself. What you won't find in the accounts of the Alazarov affair is the following. From 1934 until his untimely death in 1948,